VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Syria's new interim prime minister says he wants to deliver basic services, resettle refugees, and start tackling other vast challenges facing an economy hollowed out by war, corruption, and sanctions under the Assad regime. But Syria's coffers are empty of foreign currency. Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder has more.
Long queues form at a Damascus bakery on Wednesday, one of many signs of Syria's critical economic problems. As the new interim prime minister, Mohamed al-Bashir, said he wanted to bring back millions of Syrian refugees and provide basic services, but would struggle to without foreign currency. Syria's coffers contain only local pounds worth barely anything, Bashir told Italian newspaper Il Corriere della Sera. Bashir ran a rebel-led government in a tiny pocket of northwestern Syria before the 12-day rebel offensive toppled President Bashar al-Assad. In the capital, banks have reopened, as have shops, and there are fewer armed men about. But rebuilding Syria will be a colossal task, following a civil war that killed hundreds of thousands of people. International sanctions on the Assad regime have also gutted the economy. Two senior U.S. congressmen, a Republican and a Democrat, wrote a letter calling for Washington to suspend some sanctions on Syria. The most punishing ones are up for renewal this month, and the former rebels have told Reuters they are in touch with Washington about potentially easing them. Basel Hamwi, head of the Damascus Chambers of Commerce, told Reuters the new government has told business leaders it will adopt a free market model after decades of state control and integrate Syria into the global financial system.
Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder. This is VOA News. U.S. officials say Russia might again launch its lethal new intermediate-range ballistic missile against Ukraine soon. Pentagon spokeswoman Sabrina Singh cited a U.S. intelligence assessment on Wednesday.
It's possible that Russia could do it in the coming days. I don't have an exact date for you. I think it's important to note that should Russia choose to launch this type of missile, it's not going to be a game changer on the battlefield. It's just yet another attempt to inflict harm and casualties in Ukraine. We've seen this before. They're trying to use every weapon that they have in their arsenal to intimidate Ukraine.
The warning comes as Russia's defense ministry said on Wednesday it may retaliate against Kyiv for an attack on a military base in the Rostov region in southern Russia. FBI Director Christopher Wray says he intends to step down next month when U.S. President Joe Biden leaves office. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Wray's announcement comes days after President-elect Trump said he'd nominate Kash Patel to take the job he gave Wray in 2017. They clashed from the start. During Wray's confirmation hearing, he split with Trump over the probe into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia.
I did not consider Director Mueller to be on a witch hunt.
The FBI ended up entangled in explosive probes of Trump that led to two indictments, and just days ago.
Well, I can't say I'm thrilled with him.
Trump on NBC's Meet the Press. He calls Wray's resignation a great day for America. Wray told the FBI workforce his resignation is the best way to avoid dragging the Bureau deeper into the fray. Sagar Magani, Washington.
New York police said on Wednesday that evidence from the killing of an American healthcare executive links the suspect to last week's shooting. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
The gun found on the suspect in the killing of the United Healthcare CEO matches shell casings found at the scene.
We were able to match that gun to the three shell casings that we found in Midtown at the scene of the homicide.
New York City's Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch made the announcement.
We're also able in our crime lab to match the person of interest's fingerprints with fingerprints that we found on both the water bottle and the Kind bar near the scene of the homicide in Midtown.
Police had said earlier that they believe the gunman bought the items at a nearby coffee shop while waiting for his target. I'm Haya Panjwani.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The WHO says malaria remains a major threat in Africa despite global progress.
The WHO African region carries about 95% of the global burden of malaria, and children under the age of 5 are hardest hit by the disease.
Zimbabwe, with U.S. support, aims to end HIV/AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. Ghana's president-elect meets with President Nana Akufo-Addo to install the national transition team. Botswana's president promises to restore Bushmen rights in Beria after a three-year delay. There is more fallout in the ongoing division in the Liberian House of Representatives over the removal of the speaker.
All citizen lawmakers are expected to conduct themselves within the confines of the CDC policy.
And in Damascus, Syria, locals celebrate new freedoms amid all fears. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The World Health Organization says malaria remains a serious threat in Africa, with 95% of deaths occurring in the region. This year's WHO World Malaria Report shows that people from low- and middle-income countries are the most affected globally. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says despite the efforts to fight the disease, it continues to affect especially children and pregnant women. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
The World Malaria Report 2024 indicates that since the year 2000, 2.2 billion cases and 12.7 million deaths from the illness have been averted. The World Health Organization, however, says it remains a threat in many low-income countries. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus calls on affected countries and international donors to step up investment and action to end malaria. Global funding for malaria control, particularly in high-burden African countries, remain insufficient. Arnold Lemenek heads the Strategic Information for Response Unit at the WHO Global Malaria Program.
In 2023, malaria claimed the lives of nearly 600,000 people worldwide. The WHO African region carries about 95% of the global burden of malaria, and children under the age of 5 are hardest hit by the disease. Since 2015, however, the region has achieved a small reduction in its malaria mortality rate. But the pace of progress must be accelerated to reach global malaria targets.
There are gaps in the fight against malaria, with efforts to control and eliminate the disease in 83 countries worldwide failing to make progress. The WHO says some groups in the society are not able to access the health care they need. Alia Eliasiru is the head of the WHO Department for Gender Equality, Human Rights and Health Equity. She says there is inequality access to malaria treatment, with people living in poverty being affected the most.
Malaria takes the heaviest toll on those who are poorest and are most disenfranchised segments of a society. So if you look at the report, the data shows that children under the age of 5 who are living in low-income households have the highest prevalence of malaria. And as their socioeconomic status improves, the risk of malaria and the prevalence will decrease.
The WHO says there were at least 263 million cases and 597,000 malaria deaths worldwide in 2023, representing about 11 million more cases in 2023 compared to 2022. Daniel Ngamije is the director of the WHO Global Malaria Program. He says, as of November 2024, 44 countries and one territory had been certified malaria-free, with more countries showing steady progress in ending the disease.
Global efforts to combat malaria continue to save lives and prevent disease on a massive scale. In 2023 alone, more than 177 million cases and 1 million deaths were averted as well. A widening cycle of low-burden countries are making steady progress toward malaria elimination. In 2023, over half of 83 malaria endemic countries worldwide reported fewer than 10,000 cases of malaria.
According to the WHO, as of December 2024, 17 countries had introduced malaria vaccines through routine childhood immunization. This ramping up of vaccines in Africa is expected to save tens of thousands of young lives every year. Earlier this year, ministers of health from 11 African countries that account for two-thirds of the global malaria burden signed a declaration pledging to equitably lower the disease burden. Among them are Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana, Mali, Mozambique, Niger, Nigeria, Sudan, Tanzania, and Uganda. For VOA Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in San Francisco.
Authorities say the mystery flu-like illness that has killed dozens of people in Southwest Democratic Republic of Congo in recent weeks might be malaria. The Associated Press says they cite results from laboratory samples of infected people. The National Institute for Biomedical Research and the head of the World Health Organization both said most of the small number of samples taken tested positive for malaria, but more research is needed. The WHO says in recent weeks there were 416 reported cases of the mystery disease and 31 deaths from it in hospitals. The DRC's health minister has said that there were another 44 deaths in the remote community. Once ravaged by the HIV/AIDS epidemic, health officials in Zimbabwe aim to eliminate the disease as a public health threat by 2030. They credit the U.S. with aid and support for making the progress possible. Columbus Mavunga reports from the town of Marondera, where U.S. assistance ensures quality HIV health services for Zimbabwean citizens.
U.S. officials recently told the HIV services area at Marondera Hospital, located some 70 kilometers east of Harare, the Zimbabwe capital, where HIV/AIDS once sickened thousands. Speaking to journalists after meeting the American guests, Dr. Delight Madoro, a district medical officer in Mashonaland East, said the U.S. presidential emergency plan for AIDS relief, or PEPFAR program, was enabling Zimbabwe to combat the epidemic with strategies such as PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, and blood-based self-testing.
And after maybe test positive, their staff and support that is there at the hospital or the facilities to help link with other HIV services. So there's a lot that's happening on the ground in terms of fight against HIV through the support that we're getting from PEPFAR. And in terms of human resources, we're getting more staff, and this means we're going to, if our clients are going to have more time with the clinicians, we become thorough and we get thorough in terms of our treatment and our different things that we're doing for our patients.
Pamela Tremont, the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, led the U.S. delegation, which included officials from PEPFAR and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She said the U.S. was committed to help fight the HIV epidemic in Zimbabwe.
We've made huge progress since 2006. The number of deaths from HIV has fallen 80%, and that is something I think we should all be very proud of. The United States is extremely happy and gratified to support Zimbabwe in this fight through the provision of antiretroviral treatments and the provision of many health workers at a lot of health clinics and hospitals around Zimbabwe.
The CDC has been in Zimbabwe since 2003, and it is working with PEPFAR to assist the Zimbabwe government in fight against the HIV pandemic, officials told VOA. Ad Cham is the CDC's Zimbabwe HIV Services branch chief and said the PEPFAR program enabled the HIV facility to be set up at Marondera Hospital.
We have been supporting this facility for many, many years now, and we are really grateful for the collaboration with all the key stakeholders. And through that strong collaboration, we're able to realize these results.
Zimbabwe is one of the countries hit hardest by HIV/AIDS, especially before 1999, when authorities introduced an AIDS levy, a 3% tax on income and business profits, which is used by the National AIDS Council for programs to combat the spread of the pandemic. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Marondera, Zimbabwe.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 12. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Ghana, President-elect John Dramani Mahama and President Nana Akufo-Addo have met to install the 2024 National Transition Team to work on a peaceful transfer of power following the December 7 elections. VOA's Paul Ndiho is in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, covering the vote. He tells me the peaceful transfer of power has been part of Ghana's long democratic tradition.
Ghana has been known in the region as a beacon of hope or as a beacon for democracy. And today, the leaders demonstrated that. Outgoing President Nana Akufo-Addo invited incoming President, President-elect John Dramani Mahama to Jubilee House, to his residency. And they sat down, had a conversation, talked about the transition. Moments ago, they just inaugurated the transition team. Both presidents spoke about the importance of this day, what it means in the region, what it means for the people of Ghana. And they all called on the process to be smooth and transparent so that Ghanaians gain confidence in their system.
As you mentioned, the democratic tradition of Ghana continues.
Absolutely. When you think about what has happened in the region, not very far away from here, where military regimes are in charge, and then across the border, you find a smooth transition of power, meaning that one power is handing over power to another. It's a remarkable example of a growing democracy that Ghana projects in West Africa.
So, Paul, may I ask you, how is the Elections Commission doing? Are all the results in, particularly the parliamentary election results? Because I was just reading an article in the Ghana Graphic newspaper where one of the parliamentarians is saying that they should not go ahead with the transition process until all the results have been announced. So what can you tell us about the parliamentary election results?
That's correct. We've had issues where in some areas, some regions, are not very near here in Accra, but very far away in the northern part, eastern and central part of Ghana, where violence broke out. These agitated young people want jobs. They think that because Mahama won, they want jobs now. But one of the other reasons why violence broke out and a lot of people were injured, some policemen and soldiers, and a lot of property destroyed, was simply because there is contention that some members of parliament who have refused to concede defeat, saying that they won. So as a result of that, there is confusion. Now that confusion is boiling and people are beginning to take matters into their own hands to do a lot of damage. But simply put, overall performance of this electoral commission is commendable. Everything went on smoothly, with the exception of those few areas that I just mentioned, where people are taking matters into their own hands.
That's VOA's Paul Ndiho speaking with us from the Ghanaian capital, Accra, covering the presidential and parliamentary elections. There is more fallout in the ongoing division in the Liberian House of Representatives over the removal of Speaker J. Fonati Kofa. The Opposition Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, led by former President George Weah, has expelled the Deputy Speaker, Thomas Fala, from the party for his involvement in what the CDC calls the illegal removal of Speaker Kofa. This comes after President Joseph Boakai's government this week recognized the majority bloc and their new speaker, Richard Kuhn. CDC National Chairman Yanga Kao tells me that the CDC reaffirms its recognition of Kofa as the legitimate speaker of the 55th legislature.
The CDC has resolved to expel the deputy speaker, Thomas Fala. The CDC has also issue a strong condemnation of the Unity Party government for attempts to manipulate the Liberia political process by the late interpretation of the recent Supreme Court decision on the illegal removal of the Speaker, Honorable J. Fonati Kofa.
Does the CDC think that Representative Fala and the others betrayed your party? And why do you think that is so?
So basically, the CDC has principles, and all lawmakers of the CDC are under strict constitutional obligation by the CDC bylaws and constitution to stick within the discipline of the party as elected representatives on the CDC ticket. All CDC lawmakers are expected to conduct themselves within the confines of the CDC policy. In this case, the lawmakers led by the Deputy Speaker have allowed themselves to be used by the sitting Unity Party government, by working with the Unity Party government to undermine the rule of law. And we want to send out a cardiac to the government that these attempts to illegally remove the Speaker, even in the face of the ruling of the Supreme Court of the Republic of Liberia, is totally reprehensible. And we reject it categorically. And we want to sit here emphatically that we still view Honorable J. Fonati Kofa as the legal Speaker of the 55th National Legislature of the Republic of Liberia.
Why did your party wait until this time, after Speaker Kofa has been removed, before you can come out to say this?
Well, we have been taking action. You follow all of the releases from the CDC, and from the very inception of this attempt to illegally remove the Speaker, I started pointing out that the government was the chief mastermind of this plot to remove the Speaker, in which some of our lawmakers have been enlisted. And on that, we have called on our lawmakers to this day. And we have been giving the Deputy Speaker and other lawmakers the opportunity to come back to support Speaker Kofa. But all of those efforts fell on deaf ears. And so that's why the Deputy Speaker today has been expelled from the CDC, and we have given an ultimatum to other lawmakers in the CDC to return to status quo ante, or will be compelled to take similar action or portion against them.
Was former President Weah in this meeting?
So what we can say, this is a decision of the Congress of Democratic Change. This is a collective decision. The CDC is united, including the Senate bearer, political leader of the CDC, former President George Manuel Weah.
Jean Kakao is the national chairman of the Opposition Coalition for Democratic Change of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Botswana's new president has promised to restore some rights, which were taken away from the Bushmen, an indigenous tribe of hunters and gatherers found across southern Africa. This week, the government allowed the tribe to bury a tribesman who died in 2021 on the group's ancestral land, ending a drawn-out impasse. Mkundise Dube reports from the capital, Habaroni.
Biteng, however, died in December 2021 and wanted to be buried in his ancestral home in the vast and arid Central Kalahari Game Reserve, CKGR. However, the courts barred the family from burying Hawaregi in the reserve, from which most of relatives were forcibly removed to protect the wildlife zone. International tribal rights advocacy group Survival International has argued the Bushmen were pushed out of the game reserve because there are diamonds in the area. The previous government denied those allegations, saying that instead it wanted the Bushmen to move closer to modern amenities and life. Before Kahoberegui's burial Tuesday, President Dumabogo, who took power 6 weeks ago, promised to restore the Bushmen's rights, including allowing them to resume hunting wild animals. He says, "The power is now in your hands. If you want permits to be allowed to hunt, it's up to you. I hear your concerns." The president added, "When I represented you in cases against the government, we wanted it to be like this so that you are free." Boko, a former opposition leader, is a human rights lawyer who represented the tribe in court against the state before he became Botswana's president. Itumeleng Johani, an officer at local human rights advocacy group Diswanelo, says the new government is on the right track and should do more to protect minority groups.
We therefore note with appreciation that finally the body of Mr. Pitsing Haoberekwe, which has been in the mortuary for over 2 years, will be laid to rest. His family will be able to lay him to rest on his ancestral land with the dignity to which he had hitherto been denied by our courts.
Survival International has been involved in legal battles against the Botswana government, notably against the group's eviction from the CKGR in 2006. UK-based Jonathan Mazoa is Survival International Communications Director.
I think this is an incredibly significant moment for the new government. The fact that the new president, as one of his first acts in office, has done this, that he's signalled that it's very important for him and his new administration, I think will give a lot of people hope, especially the Bushmen who fought so long for the right to return to the Central Kalahari Game Reserve and especially for their right to bury their elders there on their ancestral lands.
Mazoa says better days could lie ahead for the tribe under President Boko's administration.
No one could really have imagined that the president of Botswana would be the very lawyer who helped them in court in their long legal battle to return to their ancestral land and to live there once more. It's a historic event and one that signals, hopefully, better days ahead.
There are more than 100,000 Bushmen spread across southern Africa, but most live under pressure from area governments to abandon their traditional lives of hunting wild animals and gathering wild plants and roots. Kondisi Duwe, VOA News, Habroni, Botswana.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says Somalia and Ethiopia have reached a deal to end a nearly year-old bitter dispute following hours of Turkish broker talks in Ankara. Hailing it as a historic agreement, Erdogan says he hopes the deal will be the first step towards a new beginning based on the peace and cooperation between Somalia and Ethiopia, according to the French news agency AFP. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud flew into Ankara earlier on Wednesday for the latest round of talks following two earlier rounds that made little progress. Businesses have reopened and many people are returning to work after the dramatic collapse of the government in Syria. But, as VOA's Heather Murdock reports from Damascus, some locals fear the war is not over even as they celebrate new freedoms.
In this market in central Damascus, shops have reopened and it appears to be business as usual, despite the dramatic collapse of the government only days ago. But people here say they are still deeply afraid. Last night and the night before, Israeli bombs pounded military targets all over this country. Besides bombs, they say, it is also not clear if the war is over or not. We're told the rebel victory over the Syrian government could usher in a new era of peace. Or it could also be another phase of the war. On the roads outside of Damascus, we see abandoned government checkpoints and military vehicles. Uniforms worn by government soldiers lie in the streets with stray bullets and other abandoned equipment. In the market, we are told one thing that has changed dramatically in recent days is their ability to speak freely without fear of retribution from the government. One man told us that he believes that if he said anything negative about the former government to foreign journalists, that he would simply disappear and never see his family again. Reporting from Damascus, Heather Murdock, VOA News.
And that's it for this Thursday, December 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.
The topic of gender-based violence is redundant to some, but it is one that cannot be ignored. The World Health Organization maintains that globally, one in three women, around 736 million, are subjected to physical or sexual violence. On the next episode of Our Voices, we join the world in the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.